Welcome to the Israel Answers series, connecting Israel, the Bible, and you. Join Susan Michael as she explores timely issues and current events from a scriptural perspective to equip the Christian world with a balanced and biblical response. Be sure to subscribe for future episodes, which will ignite your faith and bring the Bible to life in your everyday world. Now, let's join Susan with your Israel Answers.
Well, hey there, and welcome back to the Out of Zion show, where each week we try to connect Israel, the Jewish people, and the Bible with you. Today we have a very special guest that I want to introduce to you, Shelley Neese, because she's not only dedicated her life to educating and activating Christian support for Israel and the Jewish people and all things that the ICJ is about, but she's recently joined us at the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem to assist us in our common work. But also, Shelley will be conducting her own interviews for us here on Out of Zion. So I really wanted to take a few minutes to introduce her to you and let you get to know her and a bit more about her story. So Shelley, welcome to Out of Zion.
Thanks for having me, Susan.
Yeah, great to have you. And for those who are unfamiliar with your work, you are the president of the Jerusalem Connection, and you are author of the Copper Scroll Project, which was a fascinating book, I have to say. I read it from cover to cover. It was so interesting. And you are the host of your own podcast, the Bible Fiber Podcast, where you talk through the minor prophets of the Old Testament. It's very impressive. And you also wrote a book on those podcasts, right? Called The Bible Fiber?
Yes.
And then most recently, this past November, you joined the ICEJ team as the coordinator of American Christian Leaders for Israel, or ACLI. So, Shelley, that's really a lot of hats to wear, and it keeps you busy, I know.
Well, like everyone, after October 7th, I mean, we've all been giving 150% and just trying. And a lot of ways after October 7th, it was just a reckoning for me. I felt like I must have done something wrong. We all must have done something wrong because this is going terribly in America, and that we've been combating anti-Semitism for years, but it felt like the gloves had to come off and we had to fight anti-Semitism and anti-Semites. And so I preferred doing that in a team. And so I was very excited to join the ICEJ team and to be a more effective member of ACLI in that process.
Well, you've been a great blessing, and many more to come, I'm sure. But one thing I also wanted to mention is that your story is one of the 18 stories that we published in the Every Generations book. And we put this book together for Israel's 75th anniversary to also celebrate 75 years of Christian engagement with Israel and what it's meant to our community. So we highlighted the stories of 18 different people over five generations of adults today, out of five generations, and to show that in every generation there have been Christians who made that trip to Israel, and it was so life-changing that they came back with a lifelong passion and to serve Israel, Jewish community, be involved in anti-Semitism. And your story was definitely one that qualified for the book, but a delightful, delightful story. So for our listeners, tell us just a brief version of that, and they can all get this book at Amazon or through the ICEJUSA.org website store. But tell us your story in brief, Shelley. It's really, really cute.
Well, so I, like you, am from, you know, a small town in America, but I originate from Louisiana, and I went to Louisiana State University. So I did not grow up with a lot of Jewish people in my life, or really much understanding of Jewish history, and certainly wasn't tracking what was going on in modern Israel. But I got married in 2000 to my college sweetheart, and we were just looking for a fun study abroad adventure. And there was a medical school in Beersheba, Israel. And so my husband attended that school, and I went to graduate school at Ben-Gurion University. And we got married, and 2 weeks later, we were off to Israel, you know, put all of our wedding gifts in my parents' attic and moved to Beersheba, Israel, which is also not the easiest of all the Israeli cities to live in at that time. It's just in the desert, and it's quite hot. And we couldn't afford an apartment with air conditioning. But I just remember we got to the airport in Frankfurt for our connecting flight to Tel Aviv. And it was only then, at that moment, after we had sold all of our things and made lots of 20-year-old decisions, that I realized I was about to be part of a religious minority instead of majority. And I even think in my head, I had always heard that Jerusalem, you know, was the epicenter for Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And so I had thought in my head that maybe it was about a third of each population group. I don't think I even really appreciated that this was a Jewish nation where Jews were the majority, and this was the Jewish capital in Jerusalem. And so I just had a lot to learn. And that was, I was a math major and a science major when I arrived. And then the second Intifada broke out. And so suddenly terrorists are blowing themselves up on buses and city shopping centers. And so I needed answers for what was going on around me. And most of my classmates were Jewish, especially after September 11th, a lot of the non-Jewish Americans returned back to their home institutions. And so I had a lot of catching up to do. Even if I tried to take every class I could in Jewish history and Holocaust studies and the history of the Middle East and modern Israel's wars, but so many of my Jewish classmates just had a foundational knowledge that I didn't have. So I was also trying to learn more outside of the classroom and read extra and do more. So it was just a real fire hose of an experience to try and just get all of the education that I had missed out on to be able to understand what was happening. I didn't know who Hamas was or who Hezbollah was. And so in that process, over the course of 3 years, and also just getting to know my Jewish and Israeli neighbors and having Shabbat dinners, you know, and building relationships, that was also an educational experience that fed into me and informed me. So at the end of 3 years, I mean, I guess I became a card-carrying Christian Zionist, you know? So that's what I tell people. It's not, I had been a Christian since my childhood, grew up in a Christian family. So it's not as if the second that you become a Christian, you also learn about all things Israel and how to articulate Israel's needs and interest in the world. That's something that comes later through prayer and research and education and through friendships with Jewish people and Israelis. So it was when I came home that I really wanted to share with other Christians what I had learned and make sure and advocate for Israel back in the U.S. once I was here.
So, well, that really explains you have such a depth of knowledge of the history of Israel, of modern Israeli society, and you're so comfortable in the world of Jewish-Christian relations. You know how to relate to Jewish people, but explain to us now how you got so interested in the biblical part of this. I mean, you just did a teaching series through the entire Minor Prophets. That's pretty heavy lifting right there. And then you're also working on a degree in what, biblical archaeology? So tell us about that part of your life.
So in the end, after those 3 years, I finished a degree in Middle Eastern Studies. That was my graduate degree. And Middle Eastern Studies, it was unique to do Middle Eastern studies in Israel because a lot of times it doesn't include Israel. So if you do Middle Eastern studies in a lot of American institutions or in Europe, they don't necessarily include Israel as part of that. They include Israel with European studies or don't know where to put it. And so being able to do Middle Eastern studies and learn about modern Israel within the context of living there and with Israeli professors was really invaluable, but it only goes as far back as the Ottoman period. And so after years of writing about modern Israel and doing it more as a journalist, I really felt my lack of knowledge for the biblical time period. And that's the period I cared so much about. And it's the period that on my own devotional time and on my own personal time, I'm always swimming in biblical Israel's waters. So I really wanted to learn how to connect those two. And so I went back to school for a biblical studies degree, which, as you said, is a biblical archaeology degree at the Bible Seminary. So I am heading off to Israel in 1 week to dig at the archaeological excavation in Shiloh, which is where the tabernacle was for 300 years. And so I'm super excited about that. It's one of the coolest digs going on in Israel right now, and it's led by a Christian archaeologist. So that was the, I mean, I felt my lack of knowledge is the real answer, but also this burning desire as a Christian and as someone who loves the Bible to just do diligence to learn it better. And I hear a lot of times from Christians that are reading the Minor Prophets or reading Ezekiel, what I don't want is for Christians to walk away from any of the biblical text and feel dumb instead of feeling inspired. And it's really possible in those texts, because if you don't know the Babylonian Empire, if you don't know what was going on in Israel during this pretty short time period when the prophetic voice was so loud, you a lot of times just walk away from the text feeling like you didn't get anything from it and it was confusing. Who are the Edomites? You know, who are these? Who are the Philistines? Who is the biblical text speaking for and against? And so that is a real call in my life now, is to just do some Bible reading handholding with believers who want to know more, who want to be better Bible readers and more informed Bible readers, and make the prophetic text more approachable and hopefully more meaningful. And so that's been a fun journey. I've been doing Ezekiel for the last year because I kind of put out a survey to Christian listeners of what book they would like to hear from next. And Ezekiel was one of the books that people just feel really overwhelmed by. They know that it connects to the New Testament. They know it's quoted so much in Revelation and that it points to Israel's beautiful future as well, but they just don't know how to read it. It feels very overwhelming and sometimes even overstimulating. And so I've been in the process of doing Ezekiel for the last year, which is Ezekiel, you really have to hold out for the second half and then it gets really promising. But the first half is hard.
It's like reading through the Bible and you get to Leviticus. And it's like, if you can just hold on, it gets a lot better after Leviticus.
Yes. Not all books are created equal. It does feel that way.
You know, biblical archaeology, when I first went to Israel, which honestly, it was what, is it? It'll be 48 years ago. I'm sorry, it's just...
I knew the year because I'd recently read your chapter in Every Generation's Story, yeah. But I didn't want to give it away.
Yeah, I need to be at least 80 by now. But so that was my first trip. I just wasn't interested at all in biblical archaeology. We'd go out and stand in the blazing hot sun surrounded by dust, and it's so hot, and you're standing on these rocks, and they're saying, well, now that's where the palace was. And you're like, how do you get that out of that pile of rocks? How do you know that? I can't visualize it. And so I just didn't really like it. But I have to say that 48 years later, archaeology has become so exciting. And now they're just uncovering so much, especially underground in Jerusalem. And it's doing nothing but proving the Bible. Although archaeologists always say, we're not there to prove the Bible. We're just to uncover, you know, what it says about the history of that time period. But it's proving the Bible. Mm-hmm. It really it's so exciting. And, you know, your book, The Copper Scroll Project, mm-hmm. was so exciting. And it just kind of shared that excitement with everyone of learning the significance of the archaeology and the findings and what one thing means this and another means that. And at the end, it always comes back to supporting what the Bible says and the historical narrative in the Bible. So, all right. Well, and also you're married to someone in the military. So you and your family, you have moved around so much. But we first met how many years ago, Shelley, when you were in D.C.?
20 years ago, and it was when at the Israel Embassy, and Jim Hutchins, our founder of Jerusalem Connection, he had told me, you really need to meet Susan Michael. She's a real fireball, a real mover and shaker in our world. So I'm pretty sure I pursued your friendship and your mentorship early on, as did many of us that are now leading other organizations or keep, you know, people in the community. But yeah, that was my memory, is seeing you across the room at the Israel Embassy and my boss telling me you were someone I needed to meet.
So tell us quickly about Jim and about the Jerusalem Connection, since you are president now. So share that.
So I joined when I came back from Israel. At first I worked for the Israel Embassy the Israel Consulate in Boston. And that was almost like helping me with the culture shock, the reverse culture shock of having lived in Israel 3.5 years and then coming back to the States. And we were both in school in Boston as well. And so it's just, Boston was very different from the South. And I had more culture shock moving to Boston than I had had in Israel in lots of ways. And so working at the Israeli consulate just helped soften that blow for me, and also taught me how Israelis do hasbara, how they manage Israel's reputation in America, and how they try and engage other communities outside of the Jewish community in the U.S. So it was a really critical experience being there and seeing it from the Israeli side of things, where they feel confronted and where they feel like needs the most work in America. And after that, we moved to the D.C. area, and I cold called Jim Hutchins. I was about 7 months pregnant with our first child at the time, but really wanted to work in the Christian Zionist world and felt ready and eager at that point. And I knew he was married to also another woman from Louisiana, Pat Hutchins, a co-founder of Jerusalem Connection. And you know, there's few people that the interviews go well when you're already 7 months pregnant, but he was married to his own very ambitious and very high energy Louisiana wife. And so he never batted an eye. He would just say, he brought me on board first as the editor for Jerusalem Connection magazine. And then eventually I became the vice president. And then when he retired in 2018, became the president of Jerusalem Connection. One of our big focuses through the years has been Aliyah, and we've worked really closely with ICEJ in that process, especially when so many Jews were trying to get out of Russia and the former Soviet Union. So started that in the 80s. And in the knots, we've been really involved with Holocaust education, partially because our founder, Pat Hutchins, had done a series called The Auschwitz Album Revisited that really teaches the Holocaust through the arts. And we've been involved with Liberty University in that process and really just trying to make sure that education is in front of high schooler students, especially 7th and 10th grade students, that they're learning the Holocaust twice during their K-12 experience. And as you know, I mean, it can be a very overwhelming educational process. So that's why we also incorporated the arts into that process, is that sometimes you can also speak to people when you speak to their senses. And so we've done a lot in that world as well. And then the Bible Fiber podcast is also through Jerusalem Connection. So that's an ongoing project as well. And I'm just really thankful to have been part. It also introduced me to the world of American Christian Leaders for Israel, and to you, and to all of the leaders in this world, that we all have our own callings and vocations, but that hopefully converge on major points and in, when Israel's in crisis as well.
So, well, let's segue then to ACLI, because it's interesting. I didn't remember that our first meeting was actually at the Israeli Embassy. But as you know, when I lived in D.C. for 30 years, I worked very closely with the Israeli Embassy and helped them establish relations with Christian leaders and organizations, and helped them do events there for Christians. And so that we met there is very interesting. It was because of my interaction with these leaders in D.C. for all those years that in 2015, Under the Obama administration, we really felt like crisis was right around the corner in the U.S.-Israel relationship. Didn't know exactly what form or shape, but we just felt it was coming. And so we had a meeting and said, hey, let's formalize our relationship. Right now, it's just been Susan's Rolodex, but with Rolodex, for the young people listening, is your contact list. No, a lot of people don't know that term anymore. But so we gave it a name, American Christian Leaders for Israel. We launched a little website and we began working together. It's not an organization or another entity. It's just a collaborative platform where we, all of our organizations, can come together and do things together on. And of course, Jerusalem Connection was right there in the very beginning. You've been on the steering committee since the very beginning and have been so helpful. But I do remember our lunch meeting back in November, when we began to talk about the idea of you really coming on board and helping us develop American Christian Leaders for Israel. So tell us a little bit about that decision and that shift in your life.
Well, so since October 7th, and I just remember the days right after October 7th, you started calling for Zoom meetings with the steering committee and the advisory board, because you've had so much experience in this world as the rest of the ACLI members, that even though it seemed like in the aftermath, right after October 7th, as we were all processing just the horror and the tragedy, and every day was a new awful news story, that I felt kind of optimistic in that moment. Maybe I was still, you know, still getting my feet wet sometimes in Israel's place in the world, but I felt like, okay, well, it seems like the world is behind Israel. At least it seems like they're empathetic right now on October 9th and October 10th. But I remember you and several other leaders, Gary Bauer and Earl Cox, saying, once Israel gets its feet underneath itself again, and once Israel finds its strength again to fight back, the world will turn on her. And we saw that fulfilled so quickly. It just so quickly. I mean, of course, the anti-Semites and the pro-Hamas terrorists were on October 7th cheering in the streets, but even just world leaders and world institutions turned on Israel so quickly, even though there is not a nation in the world that wouldn't have hunted Hamas to the ends of the earth for what they did to their people and on its borders or inside its territory. So we had really become engaged and very active in those days afterwards. And I know it became a lot for you, because also ICJ and every Christian Zionist institution, it just, there was so much to do in those, that first year, and continues to be so much to do, but especially to just speak as one voice, to act as one group with one motive, that Israel's security and safety is our priority, and that anti-Semitism will not be tolerated in America and must be confronted at every level. And so we all became more involved as ACLI members, I think, since October 7th. Mm-hmm. But it, not that it's its own organization, but it did need its own coordinator and communicator, someone to just always rally the troops, right? And so you do that as the director for ACLI. And so I just wanted to support you in that role, because there's so much that I've only had this role for 7 months, and there's already so much that we've done and so much that's almost seemed, that's been urgent every single time. So I'm thankful for that opportunity. And I feel like the ACLI members can feel that they feel that we have been so active and so in front of things. And so I'm hoping just to be able to continue that. Certainly, we don't want Israel to stay in crisis mode. We want Israel to be strong. And as you predicted and others predicted, it's at a critical moment right now, because they are winning this war now, and they have the enemy on the run. And so it's now more than ever that we have to support Israel and have to really articulate for Christians what has to happen next.
Well, yeah, and we can't finish dealing with one crisis before the next one starts. It's just been nonstop, and we could have never done it without your help. So tell the audience a few of the things that we have done since you started with us.
So from the very first day, the National Religious Broadcasters had said that they would host our 10-year anniversary at their convention in Dallas, which happened in February, because ACLI has now been in existence for 10 years. And because we're all leaders, because we're all, you know, people with action items, and Israel is in a moment that every day seems like there's something new where the country needs us, it turned quickly from, you know, it was never just a mix and mingle kind of event. President Trump had announced just a couple of weeks before that reception that he was going to make a statement on Judea and Samaria. And we really wanted to get out in front of that and send President Trump a letter just stating how Christians believe that this land is also biblically and historically important to the Jewish people, and that that is something certainly worthy of consideration before any statement is made on Judea, Samaria. And because he values what comes, what resolutions come out of NRB, values the Christian leaders that are a part of it, it was a unique opportunity to say something and say, make a strong statement for Judea, Samaria. And so that happened in February. Soon after that, Mike Huckabee's nomination was put in question by the U.S. Senate. And because Ambassador Huckabee now is, he's one of ours, and he is a Christian Zionist by every definition of the word, we really wanted to come out and support him. And that was not difficult because everyone has such appreciation for what he has done for decades. And so we sent a letter to every single senator asking for a smooth confirmation process for Huckabee whenever it came back around. And you were able to actually give him a congratulations letter in Jerusalem after he was nominated. And so just being able to act quickly on those kind of things. And then most important, and there's been a lot that happened in those 7 months and a lot of events and campaigns around that. But our biggest event was the Israel Advocacy Day, the first week of May in Washington, D.C., where we brought 300 rabbis, pastors, and faith leaders from 26 states and scheduled 100 congressional and Senate appointments. And we had one message that Israel's security was important, that we were watching the Iran nuclear, you know, the negotiations happening, and that we were fighting anti-Semitism within the U.S., and that we were advocating for the release of what is now all 58 of the hostages that remain in Gaza. And so that was just such an amazing opportunity. It was a 3-day event, so it was much more than even just the advocacy day. And that has, you know, steamrolled into all of these relationships that are continuing to exist between rabbis and pastors and in their own local communities. And so I'm hopeful that there will be many great things that happen from the Advocacy Day itself.
Yes, and that's not even everything.
No, that was just some highlights.
So Shelley, like looking ahead for the ways that, you know, the ACLI network, it's there for us to unite our voice so that we have greater impact in support of Israel. The American Christian community is so large. The pro-Israel Christian community is so large. So we're talking, some people say 50 million, some 60, 70 million, depending on how you count them. But it's a lot of people, and no one organization really can speak on behalf of all those people. But when we unite our voice and we get a lot of the major Christian organizations to come together and sign off on a letter to the president, then we really do represent tens of millions. Our greatest, you know, our partner, the National Religious Broadcasters, they really do, their members speak to something like 90 million people in America. And they are totally behind and unite with us all the time, and actually have designated, as you said, ACLI as their advocacy arm. And so we are really able to impact things in America. And as we look forward to the rest of this year, next year, the next couple of years, I know that we have to continue that. We have to continue growing the network so that we are growing the number of leaders that unite their voices and we have greater impact. But secondly, it's not just advocacy about Israel anymore. It's now about combating anti-Semitism. And you and I haven't even had a chance to really lay out some specific ideas and programs, a way to do that. But I see that as our two kind of priorities as we are moving forward. And combating anti-Semitism really doesn't mean we're not going to be active on Harvard or Columbia or in the far left progressive movement where anti-Semitism has really become so strong and is becoming violent. Our world is the Christian world where anti-Semitism isn't dangerous, but I want to protect our Christian churches and our young people from the influence of anti-Semitism that's infiltrating through social media or through the conversation on campuses. We need to protect them and then find those within our own community that are activists and that want to learn how to actually speak up and push back when they see it, if it's in the college campus or it's in their community. Sometimes they might hear it even in their church, to be able to speak up against it and push back. And we can actually raise up an army of tens of thousands of activists that can push back on this. And that's going to push back not just from the churches or the Christian community, but from mainstream American life, where the church does have influence still. We lost our influence with the elites, but we still have it in everyday America. And we want to push this evil out back into the fringes where it started. And so with that kind of big picture context, what are some of the ideas that you have or potential that you see that we can be working on together moving into the next couple of years?
Well, I really think for the last decade, ACLI's strength and has been its advisory board and its steering committee. And part of that is because ICJ has been working in this world for 40 years because of your time in DC and also just your good relationships and goodwill with all the other Christian leaders and heads of these Christian Zionist organizations, that has been the foundation, you know, the building stones for what ACLI is now. And going into the future, I think what I'm really looking forward to and want to get better at is engaging the pastors and the pastor networks. We really saw the benefit of that while we were in Washington, D.C. for the Israel Advocacy Day, because these are the pastors that are speaking into their own local communities. These are the pastors that hopefully can build relationships with their local rabbis and reach out to the Jewish communities in their cities when something awful happens, like what happened in Washington, D.C. last week, or when a swastika is spray painted on the local Jewish community center. Like, we need Christians, pastors and leaders in every community that can love and serve the Jewish people in their region. And so even more than the leadership in D.C. or New York or on the higher levels in Jerusalem, I am excited to bring in more pastors and pastor networks into the ACLI leadership. And we are starting to see, too, that for our Jewish friends and allies, like the Zionist Rabbinic Coalition that worked with us in Washington, D.C., they don't always know or don't know how to apply a filter to all the pro-Israel Christian groups that are out there that might not all be kosher, that might not all have Israel's best interest at heart and have real relationships with Jewish people. And so I think, too, it helps as a vetting process and as a filter process for Christian leaders that are looking to join a larger group and to be part of this one voice movement, that we speak for Israel and speak up for Israel in America, but also that we are engaging pastors because they have pulpits and they have communities and they have towns that they're leaders in. And we also want to make sure that the Christian Zionist voice is being represented in all places.
And not just churches, not just pastors. We can be developing business leaders. We can be developing young leaders. We can be developing all kinds of subgroups of leaders in American Christian Leaders for Israel. So we really do have our work cut out for us. And Shelley, we're so glad to have you. And I really am thankful for this opportunity to introduce you to our listening audience, because you've already recorded a few interviews that we're going to be playing in the next few weeks. And so we welcome you as a co-host, co-interviewer here on the Out of Zion show. And so with that, I want to thank everybody for listening today. And we hope that this conversation has encouraged you, that you too have a story and you too can get involved and get active and see what God's going to do in your life and the calling that he has on you and the ways, you know, we're here to serve you, to help you to be a blessing to Israel and the Jewish people through our ministry and through all the activities that Shelley and I lead. So with that, it's time to say shalom, shalom, and we'll look forward to seeing you back here next week. Thank you.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Out of Zion with Susan Michael. Be sure to subscribe to Out of Zion now on Apple Podcasts, cpnshows.com, YouTube, or wherever you like to listen and learn. Out of Zion with Susan Michael is a production of ICEJ USA, all rights reserved.